Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I mean, the military, they did acknowledge common partners, but they did that as a grace. The law mentioned a man and a wife. So by the law, I'm not equal. By the law, they shouldn't consider me.
A widower.
And it was very clear to me that this is the next wall I need to take down. We need to change that.
Hey, listeners. It's Mishi. So this is our final episode of 2023, a challenging and tragic year, which has seen so much anger and violence and pain. For us here at Israel Story, it's been an incredibly intense year, as we've had to adapt and reinvent ourselves in order to produce stories that give a sense of what's going on all around us. We're now in the final stretch of our end-of-year listener drive, and we're hoping not only to reach our fundraising goal, but actually to surpass it. So if you haven't yet contributed, and you do feel that Israel Story has been there for you, and adds something important to your life, I really hope you take a moment, even right now, to go to our website, israelstory.org, and donate. Okay. So, the war has, sadly, brought many new people into the limelight. We've heard stories of casualties, and hostages, and survivors, and family members. And many of those stories have entered our hearts and never left. In some cases, we feel like we've gotten to know the heroes personally. One of the first big stories of the war, in that very first and crazy week after October 7th, was that of 30-year-old Sagi Golan from Herzliya, a decorated officer in an anti-terrorism unit who was killed in action in Be'eri in the early hours of October 8th. His story made headlines because Sagi was supposed to have married his partner, Omer Ohana, 2 weeks later, and his death brought to the fore, once again, the matter of the army and LGBTQ rights. See, ever since the mid-90s, the IDF has recognized same-sex partners of fallen soldiers as eligible to receive all the rights, financial and emotional support, as heterosexual partners. But that was just a practice, and the matter was never enshrined in law. So in the weeks after Sagi's death, Omer led a successful campaign to legally secure the rights of same-sex and common-law partners of fallen soldiers. Our producers Mitch Ginsberg and Adina Karpuch went to talk to him.
My name is Omer Ohana, Sagi's partner.
And could you tell us a bit about yourself, like where you grew up? And
so I grew up in a traditional family. I have 5 siblings. I'm the last one. I'm the 6th. And it was very clear to me since ever that I'm gay. At the age of 16, I came out from closet to my friends, and then to my family. So with my friends was like perfectly normal and fine. They accepted it right away. My family at the beginning thought it's something that it will pass away with time. I mean, my father have a very big family and they're very religious. So it was harder for him than for my mother. But it was a surprise for both of them. I mean, I don't think they imagined it is possible to have a gay child. And today my mother goes as a proud mother of a proud gay man. She's proud of it. She doesn't hide it. She's the first one who will support the Pride Month and the parade, and you know, also my father. As a Moroccan that, you know, made Aliyah from Morocco in ships. So eventually, we all came to the same point. We're all good with it.
Can you tell us about meeting Sagi?
Yeah. It was June 2018. back then I was like almost 23, and there was a conference of young leadership organization in Israel. I was sitting on the grass with two of my friends, and Sagi came and he introduced himself. He said, hey, just, you know, starting talking, small talks. I mean, I was very excited because I felt he's like hitting on me, but it ended up with like a good conversation, but without us like exchanging numbers or whatever. Yeah. And I was like too proud to ask his number. The conference got to an end and I was like walking out of the hotel, and then Sagi like ran to me and said, hey, we haven't exchanged any contact details. So, and I was, yeah, let's do it. It was Saturday, and on Sunday we had our first date.
The very next day.
Yeah. It was, I mean, Sagi was so, he was so handsome. He was so smart. He was the whole package. I didn't want to miss it. It was on the Shuk Machne Yehuda, the Machne Yehuda market. We just sat there on a bar. The bar closed on us. So we started walking on the street of Jerusalem for hours. And then it was becoming late, so Sagi walked with me to my car. And I was like, everything felt so perfect. Next to my car, an embarrassing moment, me thinking about, is our first kiss going to be in a parking lot? And it was. We kissed. And even though it was like the Machne Yehuda parking lot, I felt so secured. And the Machne Yehuda market in Jerusalem is not like the most gay-friendly place in the world. But I felt so comfortable. Driving back home, I was so excited to speak with someone. So I called my friend and I was telling her it's too good to be true. There is a catch here.
So you started going out. When did you decide to bring him home?
Not long after I met Sagi. It was very important for me to be with Sagi at a Shabbat dinner. Shabbat dinner at my house is like the most special time of the week when you meet all of your family. It's a long, long table. Back then, my family was everything to me, you know, as a young adult. And then Sagi started to become the most important thing in my life. So I wanted those both things, my family and Sagi, to be connected. And, you know, I was afraid. I was the first man ever coming to my family as my partner. You know, I'm the prince of the house. You know? Everybody is, like, looking to take care of me. And bringing somebody new to the family, it's bringing somebody new to 25 other persons' lives. So
was it kind of like this unspoken, you know, everyone be nice, but just like...
Not at all. So the Johanna family doesn't, you know, it works differently. You don't keep anything in your stomach. Everybody says what they're thinking. It's a Moroccan house. It's filled with love and concern to each other. But it's also a loud house. And you need to be... You need to stand on your own. And even with all of their opinions about being gay and difficulties it summons to your life, everybody falls in love with Sagi immediately. And it couldn't be more perfect than it was. And then we just moved in together.
Can you tell me a little bit about that? Like, who's the messy one? Who leaves the hair in the shower?
Sagi and I were very different from one another. He was the organized person. He was all about planning financially our life, you know, putting the things in order. And I was like the one that imagined everything and, you know, drawing my clothes all over the place. He was about volunteering all day long. And I was about, let's go out together. He was a healthy one, you know, eating chia seeds and stuff like that. things like I personally cannot eat.
Not a main staple in the Ohana family.
No. In the Ohana family, you know, you do barbecue. So we were different from one another, but we also admired each one's way of life.
Can you tell us a bit about how that morning went? Take your time, but...
Yeah. You know what? I'll start on the 6th of October. That was a nice day. So on the 6th of October, his sergeant was getting married. And, you know, we planned our wedding in the same time. Every wedding we went to was like, we were looking on the on those small things.
The details.
Yeah, the details. What you can take to your wedding. And all of his team members from his service was in the wedding. And they're like, they're goofy. They're like dancing. Dancing like crazy, and we had a great time. And then we went back from the wedding, and Sagi was drunk. I was not. Driving back to Herzliya, we played Powerfall of Red Band, and we were screaming on the car. Such a good time. On that Saturday, woke up on the 7th of October to a siren. Went back to bed, opened the news. Saki's hugging me from behind, holding his phone, scrolling the news. The headlines were, families are trapped. Terrorists. You know, as a paramedic, I saw some stuff. I treated people in hard conditions. But the images came from Telegram in that morning. Or something human cannot imagine. So he jumped out of bed. And I'm not a morning person. I saw him putting his IDF uniforms, and I jumped out of bed as well. Usually Sagi made my coffee. On that morning I made his. He was all over the place, he was texting, and I helped him pack. He was talking with his team. It all happened, like, really quickly. I told him, don't be a hero. He was like, we're getting married. In 2 weeks, we kissed. He left. He had a motorcycle, so he wanted to drive the motorcycle to the Adam base. When he bought the motorcycle, we had an agreement that he's not going to drive the motorcycle in highways. And he was like, it's too urgent, I'm driving the motorcycle to that. And I was like, nope, you're not. So he drove the motorcycle to a different officer from the Latar unit. And they drove together to the Adam facility to gear up.
Where their unit is.
Yeah. And I was already recruited as well.
So you were also called up to the army that day?
Yeah. So I was heading to the Lebanon border, and we talked on the phone, and, you know, I had so many things to sort out. And
so you're heading north, and Sagi's heading to Be'eri?
Yeah. Sagi arrived to Be'eri around 5 p.m. that Saturday. Sagi got a mission to extract all the families from the Kerem, which is the street on Be'eri's fence, same fence they bridged and he was leading his team from one house to another, extracting families. The house was burning. The street was filled with bodies, with tanks. It was like just a shit show. And I met the families that Sagi saved, and you know, they are so grateful. And they remember him introducing himself behind the door, telling them, "I'm Sagi from Herzliya. You're safe." The last family they extracted, the father of the family told me he was thirsty because they was trapped for like so many hours. So Sagi gave him his water. I mean, it's a small detail, but that's who Sagi was. Sagi extracted children from shelter. He covered their eyes so they won't have to see their parents be slaughtered in the living room.
And were you in touch this whole time?
We had an agreement that because both of us were very busy to send their heart to each other on WhatsApp every round hour. Just to know that the other one is okay. We didn't really have the time to talk with each other. So, every round hour, two hearts. One from him, one from me. And then he stopped responding. On Sunday morning, he didn't answer. And I was knowing for sure something happened. I collapsed. I started to throw up. I fainted. I mean, my body couldn't suffer the thought. At that time, Sagi's brother was on his way to pick me up. My friends was on their way to pick me up. My mother was on the way to pick me up.
And then there was a period of several days in which you just didn't know what exactly had happened?
Between Tuesday to Wednesday, my sister woke me up. I was on my parents' house at Jerusalem. And it was, "Can you come down for a second?" It was like 1 a.m. And I was, "What do you want?" And she was like, "Just come." So I went downstairs. And there were two officers standing there. They didn't say anything. As an Israeli, when two officers are standing at the front of your door, they don't have to say anything. It goes without saying.
If you don't mind me asking, what happened after that?
I remember just, you know, getting into the car and driving into Wainana, where Eti, Sagi's mother, is living.
And was it then, at that point, that you began to feel that on top of all of your grief, you were being treated differently as a same-sex couple?
Yeah. And, you know, each family gets a main officer that escorts the family. And our main officer, he was not sensitive. He just ignored me. I remember realizing that the officer is homophobic. I mean, one of his jobs is to go over the funeral ceremony with us. You know, he took care to mention and to add his personal view to the situation. And I remember him telling me, I will not be able to tear my shirt on the funeral. In the Jewish funeral, you tear a bit the top of your shirt. You won't be able to do that because you're not a woman.
Can I ask, yeah, at the funeral, did you tear your shirt?
I did.
Was the officer there?
The officer was there. You know, I was taught that if you see a wall that prevents you getting what you want, you should take it down. And he was a wall. So it was a 2 days war against him. Those 2 days were ended at the funeral. You know, Oz, Sagi's brother, they came to tear his shirt first, and he was, nobody tears his shirt until Omer does. We used the same flowers of the wedding centerpieces for Sagi's funeral, and every leader came to sing Zachiti Le'ahov, which was supposed to be our Isle song, and it was one of the biggest funeral at that time, and the funeral was an end of something and the beginning of a new thing.
Mm-hmm. Was it then that your battle began to be officially recognized in law as an army widower?
Yeah. You know, in the Shiv'a, there were so many people here, and I didn't want anyone to hug me. I didn't want to hear anything except we're going to fight on that.
So you reached out to politicians and enshrined in law that the army would treat same-sex widowers in the exact same way in terms of benefits and everything that they do for heterosexual couples. Is that right?
Yeah.
And you were actually sitting there while the vote was happening in the Knesset.
Yeah, the law had zero Knesset members against it, and it passed.
And how did that make you feel?
I expected to feel a relief. I expected to feel something, but it just felt right. I mean, there is a long way to go still in order to achieve 100% equality for the gay community in Israel. Being equal in death is not good enough. We need to be equal in life as well.
נמחקת בשמיים והלב מטפטף לי דרך העיניים החומות אז אני זוכר שיש ידיים שרוצות אותי קרוב אני יודע שזכיתי וכשהרוח אחרי הצהריים היא מפזרת ענפים קטנים ובינתיים זה נעים אני זוכר שיש עיניים שרואות אותי קרוב ואני יודע שזכיתי שזכיתי לאהוב וכשהשמש יוצאת מעל המים ומתחיל עוד יום אפור ובינתיים אין סיבה אז אני זוכר שיש שפתיים שרוצות אותי קרוב אני יודע שזכיתי שרוצות אותי קרוב ואני יודע שזכיתי
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.